Welcome to Silicon Subcontinent. Today, we have the honor of having with us Meeta Sengupta, a writer, speaker, and an expert in educational policy and strategy. She has helped organizations like the London Business School and the Commonwealth Business Council create effective education systems while managing to write short stories for children in her spare time. Meeta, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with both of you.
Tell us a little bit about your background. So what was your path like to working in educational policy? Were there any specific events that led you to this field?
So I started off as a banker and as an investment banker. And those were the early heady days of liberalization in India. And I was sent to New York to train with JP Morgan because that was our venture partner at that time. And I trained in debt finance and debt trading, in fact. We came back to India and we realized that debt trading was really not happening. Two mega deals a week between LIC, SBI, SBI, whatever, you know, just big institutions. And a lot of the informal market. So obviously, we knew that the government of Goisex market, etc., the other debt instruments existed, but the secondary market for them, the trading for them wasn't happening. And that was our job as salespeople, right? To create the hustle, to create the action. Now, in doing that, obviously, you had to discover new markets. And one of the new markets that I discovered, I mean, I was allocated foreign banks. And foreign banks are like 10 banks in the 90s, just 10 of them. That's a very small market. So I went in right. And spoke to regional rural banks. And they had just been given the chance to run their own treasuries, which means the money that they hold with them, when you lend it out to other banks overnight and so on and so forth.
Right.
Manage your own money, the spare flush money that you have. Before that, it used to be managed by their mentor banks, public sector banks. And these people were having great fun, but they were dealing in debt as if it was equity. You know, so you buy for 30 and you want to sell for 40 kind of stuff. That doesn't happen in debt. It's like it's in paisa, literally. You know, you're trading.
Right.
You're trading in interest rates. You're trading in basis points. So in rupee terms, it translates to 10 paisa, 20 paisa, 30 paisa. You cannot. Which basically meant they had no understanding of bond math. They had not been trained in bond math while they'd been given the freedom to deal in something that is literally mathematics.
Right.
I took a year, I just spoke to my bank, ICICI Bank, and they're always wonderful. I mean, ICICI has been a wonderful organization in terms of recognizing the greater good. And I said, we can't let them be conned by us and by others. I mean, they were not being conned by us, but they were definitely being conned by other brokers. And so I spoke to NABARD, I spoke to the Bankers Institute of Rural Development in Lucknow, and we organized a series of sessions for all the chairmen. So in about four or five sessions over the year, trained these chairmen of the regional rural banks in bond math. And these are super bright people, right? Once they have the math, they went and beat every broker in town. And as a teacher, as a trainer, that was just so satisfying for me. I mean, 1 week spent with 30 of them at a time at that institute, training them four times a year, and you transform the market. That is tasting blood, man, when you know you can go out there and change entire sectors. You know, that means the farmer out there is actually getting a better bank for their savings because their banker is managing their funds better.
Right.
That's genuine impact. Just because I knew some little bit of mathematics applied in a specific way. So what you can do with whatever little you have, I had to be in education after that. Stayed in banking, stayed in economic macroeconomic forecasting for a while. Also to learn many more skills. There's a lot of learning before you can give, but definitely knew that I would get back to education sometime or the other.
Are you still connected with that side of yours, that history of yours, which is more, you know, ingrained in finance and perhaps financial education?
Well, yes and no, because I occasionally teach MBA students and I definitely teach MBA faculty because I'm a case study evangelist. I do think that especially in the Indian context, if you do not go via the case study route to learning, you get trapped in textbook learning. So the only way to pull professors out of that textbook mode is to say, here's a case study, because that's when real life examples and contemporary discussions come into the classroom. I mean, not just because it's a great story, but because that's the only way to make it contemporary. So I do. So when I teach negotiations, a lot of negotiation is literally about the finance of what's happening, and so on and so forth. So yeah, a little bit. I do not trade anymore. I think I'm not allowed to because of the contract level. See, when you have access to information, you're not allowed to trade that, obviously.
Right, definitely.
So I don't trade at all.
That would be insider trading.
yeah, I mean, I don't even have that much access to information, but still. It's a great proposition to say, I have great access to information. I just like to be cautious, yeah.
Is textbook learning, you mentioned, you know, that you teach today, especially to MBA faculty in India, perhaps more. And you mentioned that's because if you don't do case study teaching or studying using case studies, they fall into the trap of textbook teaching. Are case studies not an integral part of textbooks in India? Is that something that has been lacking a lot, even today?
So what I said was, I believe that firstly, it's always a hypothesis. I mean, you introduced me as an expert. That was very kind of you. In education, there are no experts. It just moves so fast. It's so diverse. It's so complex. Nobody should ever claim expertise in that. But yes, we do have our theories of change. I hate the term theories of change, but we all of us have our theories of what will work. And I believe that case studies are one way of encouraging the professor to allow the students or enable the students to bring in contemporary discussions. So it's as a toolkit, it works. Whether it comes in a text, whether it comes printed, whether it is purchased from Harvard or wherever it is purchased from, that's just the publisher. That it doesn't matter who the publisher is. Whether it's been written by the professor and is a work in progress, I mean, that's even more fascinating because the class is even more alive with real life discussions. And especially when the students are in their early, mid-20s, almost 30s, you know they actually know a lot about the business world. So that's a very rich classroom. That's a very rich learning experience, which doesn't happen if you're, say, for example, talking about the theory of negotiations or the micropraxis of alienation. That's a code word. One specific batch, this goes out to my batch.
Hopefully they're paying attention right now.
Well, I'll tell them to.
So this kind of discussion, we're going to circle back to this in terms of how or what changes you think might be helpful in educational practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to go back to your transition between finance and education. So what were some of the first roles you were in or some of the first tasks you were involved with as a policymaker in education?
Again, policymaker is a very grand term because policymaker is a very establishmentarian term.
Right.
And I see myself as one of your West Coast people, in a way, the spirit of rebellion, the spirit of pioneering. And I refer to the West Coast because that's where you differ from the establishment in many ways, because you want to go out there and create your own. And when I moved back to India, I mean, I'd been teaching for the longest time, actually, in London. Partially London Business School, Economic Intelligence Unit. You know, so there was stuff I knew. There was stuff I was communicating. We were building the Aditya V. Birla Center at the London Business School, which later on became the ISB. So the pilot program for the ISB Hyderabad was this small program that we were running out of London.
Oh, wow.
And I know, awesome times, right? Post-liberalization, the 90s were great. They were great. Unfortunately, and you should ask me a question about this later on, what happened to the greats of the 90s? and you know, why that spirit of transformation doesn't seem to be here anymore. But to come back to your question, the sheer transformation you could create, I brought that back to India and I realized that the education policy discussion in India is actually very establishmentarian.
Okay.
And so there were no roles as such. There were two or three organizations. So I could either join, say, Pratham, which was doing fantastic work with Asar, or I could join, and this continues to be a problem in education policy conversations, or you could join some sort of a university, which means do your hard yards and write a few papers, etc., and join that kind of a track. But there were these very traditional tracks. The policy track existed only in one or two organizations. I'm reasonably well connected, but I have a horror of nepotism. So because I knew uncles and aunties in those organizations, I didn't even approach them. I want to be known for what I do, not for whom I know. Mm-hmm. That was important to me. I was young and foolish at that time. So it was important to me to say that I've done it on my own, you know. And maybe that's not necessary. I think all of us should reflect on whether what's necessary or not over there. But that's who I was. And so I started my own organization where, and my entire cause, in fact, was the democratization of education discussion, of education policy discussion. Now, this was early, let's say 2009, 2010. And that was a time when hashtag Eduin on Twitter, which ran into, at one point of time, had a reach of 15 million, 11 to 15 million at a time, according to whatever metrics they were able to pull out at that time. You know, I just go out there and do that. I didn't own the metrics over there. But that property wasn't considered an institution at that time. In this day and age of startups, you'd say, okay, I am doing a startup that is hashtag Eduin. That brings this conversation together. Can I get funding for this conversation? And then you'd monetize it in different ways.
Yeah.
2010, that world didn't exist. So we were pioneering the properties without monetizing the properties. Is that a role? I do not know. School safety, for example. You know, so we sort of, I sort of got trapped in a way between the old world and the new world. And I'm not sure whether it's a trap or it's a natural part of any sectoral development. It doesn't really matter. I mean, there is a journey for every business. Startups also had their own journey. Venture capital had its own journey. So education policy has had its own journey. Now you have about, I think, 15 organizations in education policy. You have at least 200 or 300 edutech startups with different roles for people to start off in education, whether it is on the design side, whether it is impacting policy, whether it is gathering data, whether it is understanding your set, your market. I mean, you actually have a market now. So at that time, I had to grow my, I mean, I looked around and said, who's my competition? And there was no competition. I had to grow my own competition. And so when you grow your own competition, you realize that they've been your students. Now, you don't really compete with your students, do you? Because
you tell us.
You help them grow. You help them grow their stuff, and you give them the boost. So when you ask the question role, I personally find the word role very tricky, but it is very relevant to today's world, the word role. And there are many fantastic roles in education policy now, within the establishment and outside the establishment.
Yeah, that's an incredibly nuanced picture that you've painted for us in the education landscape over the past few years, and perhaps even more than a decade.